ain't Texas. Ooh. Ain't no hold 'em. Hey. So lay your cards down, 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 down.
We're going to lay some cards down, folks. Or just show all our cards. I don't know. This is the Maggie and Hahn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My biggest thanks to Alderman Bob Bauman, City of Milwaukee, longtime serving alderperson, fierce advocate for constituents, and takes no baloney, as Bob put it, suffers no fools. I appreciate him for that. There's a lot of political hot air that goes around, and Bob doesn't take part in any of it, in my opinion. One of our longtime listeners, Kurt from Milwaukee, texted in, is the alderman implying that only attorneys are best suited to be an alderperson? Didn't get to the question on air, but Bob's answer is no. You want to know if someone can be a good advocate for constituents. Certainly attorneys are trained in advocacy, but you have folks that are community organizers, labor organizers, or just regular folks, moms and dads, teachers, anybody else. If you feel like you can give voice and serve others by advocating fiercely, those are the sorts of things I think the alderman was trying to indicate people should be looking for, especially for local town boards, school boards, etc. And of course, we then took a moment to talk about those technical elected offices that matter so much. And Bob's advice there is make sure the person understands what the job is actually about. Couldn't agree with him more. Really happy to be joined this half hour by Milwaukee County judicial candidate Rochelle Johnson Bent. We had only a few minutes on Friday, so it's a real blessing to have you back. Good afternoon, Rochelle. Thanks for coming.
Good afternoon. How are you doing today?
I'm really good. So I started today by asking the alderman, how does a regular person figure out if the candidate for the various candidates for office are qualified, if they're going to do a good job? I get calls all of the time right about now. So, you know, like a week and a half out from election day, from a whole load of people who are like, who are these judge candidates? I don't know anything about them. Who do I know whom to vote for? You can pitch yourself too, Rochelle, but how do people figure out which of these two, which of these two judicial candidates, how do I figure out if this person is a good judge? What if I don't know any lawyers? I don't know anything. How do people figure out who the heck to vote for judgeships?
So there's multiple ways to find out who you should vote for, because we do want people to make informed decisions. And so one would be there's Vote411, which is a website that people can go to, and it has all the different candidates. You put in your address, and then it'll tell you can select all the candidates in that race. And if a candidate did respond back to that questionnaire, you can see what their stances are on certain things. Maybe you don't know a lawyer, but you may know someone who's politically informed or who just kind of keeps track of these type of things. You should ask them what they know and who they know. Go to community forums. There's a lot of organizations that host forums to meet different candidates. If you're part of a community, ask them to host one. So for instance, if you're church or you're part of, you know, YMCA, COA, or whatever it may be, ask them if they're having something or if they could host something so that you can learn about the judicial candidates. And then the last thing is look the candidates up for themselves. Look up their website, look who's endorsing them. Maybe you see on their endorsement list some people who know them and know about them, and you can ask those people. Ask other community leaders. You have an alderman, you have a
state,
you maybe have a principal or somebody who's just a little more involved in the community than you are, maybe, and you could ask them if they know anything about that race. But you want to make an informed decision. You want to talk to the people who are doing the work too, because that is a good way to know how that candidate would do and how they would suit in that arena.
The other thing I suggest people do is just a straight up Google search on somebody's name, right? And like check out their socials and see what they're saying, because there is a big difference between the sorts of things that people say when they are unscripted on socials versus what a well-scripted campaign slicked up website might say. And so if you really want to see what people actually think, check out their social media accounts, because often it's for real, real. You know what I'm saying? Like, ooh, yep. Ooh, that did not come across on your campaign website.
Yes. And then you get to learn a little bit more about their personality just in general.
Yeah.
Googling them, a lot of times you get that historic information too, because a lot of people can't wipe Google clean of everything about themselves. So you have, you know, some positive and some negatives. Like a lot of people bring up the fact that I won 2017 Mentor of the Year from the Young Lawyers Division. And because when you Google me, that pops up. And so, or my involvement with the State Bar Board of Governors. So different things do pop up, regardless if it's on your directly on your website or your campaign website or something that you're trying to put out. You know, like you said, right. The scripted information you're trying to put out, or if it's just something that's just out there about you. So that is a good way, just to Google the candidates.
One of the other things I think is really interesting, I rarely see resumes available. And I've always been like, show me your damn resume. I want it. Like, where did you work before? What's your work? Like, have you had an actual job? Because many people have never held sort of, I have a boss who has a boss. I work in an organization. I, you know, have metrics that I have to hit to keep my job. There's a lot of elected officials that have never actually done what I call like work, like the rest of us folks. You know what I'm saying? It's sort of like,
yeah, no, that's important.
Tell me who your last boss was. Because
so another thing could be LinkedIn. Yes. You know, LinkedIn is a good one to kind of check in on to see if they have it public. If they don't, request their friendship, request that connection to see if they'll accept it. They have nothing to hide. A lot of times they're willing to do it. Because sometimes you could follow someone, but not necessarily connect with them on LinkedIn. So there's different ways to learn. And then ultimately, another method, and I do tell a lot of people as I'm out and about meeting them, reach out. You know, if you want to know the candidate directly or have a question for them, you know, a lot of times their contact information, especially their emails, are available. Send an email and say, hey, I see you're running. Can you please tell me something briefly about yourself? And the candidates usually do get that information.
The good ones, at least, right? You'll hear from them. If you don't, that's a bit of information, too.
Exactly. Well,
you've heard from now long-serving Alderman Bob Bauman about how to approach some of these technical offices, aldermanic or village board, school board seats. We're talking to judge candidate Rochelle Johnson-Bent, candidate for Branch 43 in Milwaukee County Circuit Court. That election coming up on April 2nd, I think often what's so daunting for people, especially in Milwaukee County, is you get your ballot. It's like 2 pages long. 90% of the judges run unopposed. And then it's like there's as far as I know, I think you're the only contested election for a judgeship in Milwaukee County this election cycle. I want to talk to you a little bit about some of your experiences while campaigning, but before we get there, and everybody's going to, you're not going to want to miss that, because Rochelle and I, there might be a little bit of kikiing happening. We're going to swap some stories, so don't miss that. But before we get there, I want to make sure, you had so very little time on Friday. Tell people, I know your three reasons, because I've heard them now. Why are what are the three reasons that you're running to be a judge in Milwaukee County?
So the first reason I'm running for a judge is because I'm an experienced litigator who gets, I get it. I get what's going on in the court system. I've practiced the different areas of law, your criminal, your family, your civil. I've done all these different areas of law. I've litigated in front of the judges and I understand the process. The reason why that's important, and I always try to emphasize this to people, is when you have a judge who understands these different areas of law, they're able to make more informed decisions. They're able to understand that process that you're going through so that they can help you navigate the system as well as they're hearing your hearing. The second reason why I tell people to vote for me is because I believe in bridging the gaps of inequity. I want to bring more resources to the bench. You hear judges talk about this a lot, but I want to actually make sure I'm doing it, providing the resources that help people not keep coming back to the court system, making sure that they actually feel part of the process, talking to them in a way, in a language, in a communication that they can understand, so they feel like I actually want them to be part of it. I want to talk to them directly. I want to hear their you know, answers. I want to answer their questions. I want to actually feel like they're part of the process. The third reason why I'm running for judge is because I'm connected and committed and relatable. So that means, you know, I getting myself involved in community. I'm more forward facing. I love going out to the public and talking to different communities, different organizations about what issues our community is dealing with, whether it be alcohol and drug problems, mental health, homelessness. And I want to learn about the resources so that I can help them, again, number two, is helping to bridge those gaps and inequities. And then two, I get it, right? I get the fact of what it's like to walk inside Milwaukee Courthouse and be intimidated by the process. I'm a parent, so I understand, you know, from the parent standpoint of what it's like when you have family members going through the court process. I myself have had family members going through court process. I am a respite care provider for some of my cousins. I had a brother who was hit by a reckless driver. I have family members who are going in and out of the court system. So I get it. I understand how that just that process of navigating through the system is. And that's what you want. You want judges who understand it and who get it.
Well, I am super happy to have you here. We had a texter while we were talking, just texting in like an example. And as well, now that we're mentioning how you vet people and how they treat people, especially people that they disagree with, mentioning State Congressman Derek Van Orten, who is his social media accounts are unreal. He is so rude to people. And it speaks volumes, right? How do you deal with people that disagree with you, especially when you're typing from behind a screen, right? I often like to say to folks, you know, if we could all see how candidates or other leaders treat people when no one actually is watching.
That's the part.
Right?
Yes.
When power asymmetries are major or when no one's watching. And I think that's especially
just half.
Yes.
How you treat your staff, your coworkers, people who report to you, other like walking into the clerk, the courthouse. I say to people a lot of times, the people I respect, while yes, the judges are that, the clerks, they really do help run the system. So talking to them with respect is a big deal to me. And that's another thing that people should do to find out more information. If you know that person has worked with certain people, talk to the people they work with. Lots of the people to work with.
I love Anya. She's my producer. It's the same is true for radio personalities. Man, the stories I've heard, I just started to do this as a full-time job. And the stories I hear about how names that you all would know and how they treated the people that made them sound good on the radio is truly shocking to me. Yeah. Be kind, everybody. When we come back, you're not going to want to miss it. Judicial candidate Rochelle Johnson-Bent for the Branch 43 in Milwaukee County Circuit Court is with me this half hour. We're going to talk about some of her experiences on the campaign trail. I was a little shocked, but then again, maybe not, because I start thinking about some of the crazy things that people have asked me in the past.
Right.
You are not going to want to miss it. We'll be back in just a few moments with judicial candidate Rochelle Johnson-Bent.
Come take it to the floor.
Trying to run it, you know, but sometimes people ask you crazy stuff. When you step up as a woman, especially as a Black woman or a woman of color into leadership positions or raise your hand to be a candidate, I guarantee you're going to get some crazy questions, comments, requests. it never ends. I'm joined this half hour by Milwaukee County Circuit Court judicial candidate for Branch 43, Rochelle Johnson-Bent, the only contested judicial race this April 2nd. You're going to want to go to vote. As I always say, get off your butts and vote. Rochelle's here again with me to talk a little bit about her platform, which we have a few times. But after last week's show, we had a minute to just sit and chat a little bit. And I you got to share the twirl story with our listeners.
A lot of people ask me, like, what is it like being out in the campaign world? And I said, usually it's very positive, but there are times where people say some things that really catches you off, you know? And so I had a gentleman that I was talking to. I was telling him why I was running for, he had asked me why I was running for a judge. I was explaining to him why I was running for judge. And then he proceeded to go, okay, so you want my vote? Well, back up, let me see you. And then he did this, like a twirling finger that to is, tell me to turn around so he could see my whole entire body as a way to say that's why he would vote for me. And I just looked at him. I said, no. Like, there's some things I don't engage in. And yeah, I'm not engaging in this interaction anymore. So I then, because I couldn't just turn around, because then I am turning around for him.
Right?
So
then you're twirling. Like, how do you get out of that one, lady?
So I had to like walk around him awkwardly and then go like to the side. But yeah, I don't, you know, people think that because you are asking them for their vote, it now opens you up to the, I can say anything to you. Like, yes. I'm allowed to say what I want. I'm allowed to tell you any kind of ignorant thought. And because you want my vote, you have to stand here and listen to it. And I'm quick to tell people, no, that's not what's happening here. But yeah, that was just one example of a very ignorant request.
Well, we had to, at some point, as women in some of these positions, we have to laugh about it, right? And we were chuckling because, like, as a judge, I don't know if you know, I wear this big, very loose-fitting robe that's like a black potato sack. So, yeah. No,
you can't
no
twirl.
Not
in a row.
Right.
And I'm usually behind the desk. It's not like I stand up. So, like, what? And if anything, I'm like, you know, I do say when these questions sometimes go like a little off, I'll say, I get if you were asking me why I'm running or about my temperament or my position on certain topics, that's fine. Those are things you should ask judges who are running for, or people who are running for judge. But no, don't ask me to see my body.
I mean, some silliness. The closest, I've had some comments I've had. I'm tall. I get all kinds of crazy stuff. But the one, I think I've shared this on the air before, I had gotten done with one of my very first extremely contentious finance committee hearings as corporation counsel for Milwaukee County. And we were about halfway through. We were taking a longer break. We had been going for like 4.5 hours. I think my job had been threatened only once in the hearing, you know, so like an easier one. I'm being cheeky, but it was that kind of a hearing where it was really tense. Mm-hmm. And a supervisor came up to me during the break and was very complimentary. Thanks, man. You're doing a great job. Keep it up. You clearly know your business. He's like, I just have one little bit of feedback for you. And I said, well, what's that, supervisor? You know, you can always tell me what you think. I welcome all feedback. I don't learn when people are just like, you're doing a great job, right? I need to hear what you think I screw up. So I was,
absolutely.
Tell me what I can do better. And he looked at me and he said, you know, I really think you need to smile a little more.
Oh, I hate that one.
And I was, I literally looked at him for a second. I was like, wah, wah. Now I'm not going to say exactly what I said in response because it would give away whom I'm speaking about. But what I said was, well, the next time you're blankety blanking, which is his profession, mm-hmm. I want you to remember this conversation, and his profession is very stressful. I want you to remember this conversation, and while you're blankety blanking, think of me and please smile. And he looked,
that part.
Right? He looked at me like, oh, ouch. And I was like, yeah. Yeah, it's not a strip club. I don't have on Lucite heels. There is no pole. I am not tap dancing, stripping, or otherwise smiling when someone is basically accusing me of being incompetent in a public hearing. I don't need to smile while I'm doing that.
Right. Another one I heard was I look old, which is crazy. It's almost, you have to present yourself. Like the statements that some of the men may have been about a lot of, I need to present myself in a manner to be physically appeasing to them. And I'm like, I have a job. I'm a whole entire professional. I have a lot of skills like that. We're not doing that. We're not having that kind of conversation. And you're not going to belittle my skills or my knowledge by trying to just make me seem like I'm a physical being.
Well, and this is what I've talked about this a lot on my show, that most men don't realize how tiny the target is that must be hit for women in leadership positions, female elected officials, and especially people of color and women of color. It is just, there is an expectation, and damn, if you don't get that exactly right, there is such small margin for error.
And this feeling of you representing any and everything of your background. So a lot of times, especially for Black people, I know we feel like, well, everything you do is constantly representing, because if anything happens, it's always a Black female, blah, blah, blah. And it's this, so this, it's this demanding pressure of you always feel like you have to be at the top of your game, saying the best things, representing yourself in the best manner, because you're representing women, you're representing Black people, you're representing mothers, you're representing. So I got to carry all these, or I said, I got to wear all these hats, but I got to wear them perfectly, because if you don't, then it's almost like, well, she, you know, this is how she look makes us look embarrassing. You know, this is embarrassing to Black people. And it's like, I'm representing Rochelle. Like, that's how it should be. But unfortunately, that's not how it is. So we have to remember that.
Well, and that's why, you know, identity is not just how we self-identify, but how we are also seen by others. Yeah. And folks that aren't in the traditionally powerful roles, it is required that we have to see ourselves being seen by others. And that is damn hard work. We've got just about a minute left. Soon to be Judge Rochelle Johnson Bent, judicial candidate for Branch 43. What are your parting words to voters in Milwaukee County? Why should they vote for you coming up on April 2nd?
Well, first, I want to make sure everyone knows how to get to my website. It's RochelleForJudgeMKE.com, and the four is the number four. So Rochelle, R-O-C-H-E-L-L-E, ForJudgeMKE.com. You can go there to learn some more information about me, but I'm also, I have a Facebook account, or you can look me up on LinkedIn to get my resume and background information. But just real briefly, just again, vote for me because I'm an experienced litigator. I care and connected to the community, and I'm really trying to make sure people feel seen and heard in the courtroom.
I appreciate you, and I really
appreciate you.
I can't wait to spend some time when we're not on the radio and spill all of the tea about all of the things, because I know we got more stories. That is 43rd Branch.
Branch 43.
Milwaukee County Circuit Court Judge Candidate. Rochelle Johnson Bent, my thanks to you. Best of luck coming up on April 2nd. Everybody go vote.
Please go vote. And tell a friend.
We'll be back with more here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. What's up, Wisconsin? Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm your host, Maggie Dawn, and you are listening on the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, you can always see my crazy hand gestures, facial expressions, and whatnot, and all of our fabulous guests by watching us live on YouTube, Facebook, and the platform now known as X, Elon Musk's $44 billion toy. we just had on Judicial Candidate Rochelle Johnson Bent, Branch 43, Milwaukee County Circuit Court. Be sure you get out and vote on April 2nd. My thanks to Rochelle for joining me again as she winds up this spring election season. Before that, I was with Alderman Bob Bauman, but at the very top of the show, I began by talking about the psychological priming that Donald Trump has done to get folks, including the media, desensitized to the escalating rhetoric. I just wanted to share some of the texts that came in that I didn't have a chance to get to before I introduce my next guest. This coming in again on the text line, 855-75-CIVIC. It seems to me so much of Trump's success was driven by the fact that the media makes profit on his clown-like angry behavior. If there was no profit in showing Donald Trump's behavior in the beginning, there wouldn't be the problem now. At this point, he is a cash register bringing in eyeballs and ears to listen and see what he says, and advertising rates go up. Yeah, gosh, I hope I'm not part of the problem. I mean, really, candidly. I don't like listening to Donald Trump live because it's like you can't fact check him live. It's nearly impossible. So I try to avoid doing that. I didn't really like trying to comment on the Republican rebuttal to the president's State of the Union because I couldn't scream into the mic every time Senator Britt lied, like, lie! It'd be a little bit, you know, too Marjorie Taylor Greene. But this is a problem, right? The media ecosystem feeds off of sensationalism. And Donald Trump is a master of sensationalism. It's a problem. But at the end of it, it's up to media, and I hope I try to live up to this goal, to call it out for what it is really clearly. Not simply to get eyeballs and ears, but to share information and help us gain awareness as voters so that you and I are as wise and savvy of consumers of information and of news and of politics that we can be. That's why I do it. Because what he says matters, and what he's saying is getting worse. Another texter texting in, I blame Moscow, Mitch McConnell, and the other Republicans who did not vote to impeach Trump. If they would have supported impeachment, Trump wouldn't be able to run for any federal office again. Yeah, I mean, have you no shame, sir and madam? Again, all of this is under this generalized patina of, oh, Democrats do it too. No, can't remember a Democratic presidential candidate calling for a bloodbath and saying that there'll never be an election again in the United States if they don't win. I don't recall liberal think tanks lining up side by side and shoulder to shoulder with dictators like Viktor Orban. Tomorrow, I'm going to bring this all together. Trump's increasing calls to violence and his very clear call that we will slip into the abyss as a country unless I am not just elected, but kept in power for life is effectively what he's saying, because if he's the only one that can keep us from the abyss, well, then he should be in power forever. I'm going to tie that together with what just went on at Mar-a-Lago with Turkey's Viktor Orban. And then what happened at the Heritage Foundation's headquarters in Washington, D.C. with Viktor Orban. And how all of this relates to what I talked with Jane Matinere this morning about on Matinere on Air, which is the Heritage Foundation's 887 plot to turn America into an autocracy. Oh, wait, that's not what it's called. I'm sorry. That's not what they called it. They called it a mandate for leadership, the conservative promise. Anytime I hear the words mandate and promise together, I get really scared because it sounds like this is what's going to happen, whether you like it or not. You're not going to want to miss that. We'll be dealing with Viktor Orban and the Heritage Foundation tomorrow on the Maggie Dawn Show. In addition, I will be joined by Reggie Jackson, Milwaukee historian, expert on race in Wisconsin and nationally. How did we get here? Reggie's always got the answers, as well as my friend and yours, Rob Henkin, the executive director of the Wisconsin Policy Foundation. We're going to be talking about the MPS funding referendum. I got calls about who to vote for judge just this past week, and I got a bunch of calls about, are you supporting the MPS funding referendum? You can find out tomorrow, and you can find out why MPS is asking for money again tomorrow with Rob Henkin from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. You're not going to want to miss a minute of that. But I am so excited to be the one breaking news here on the Maggie Dawn Show, which is always exciting to be the one that got there first, not just in the media, but also on the Civic Media Radio Network, because my friend Brady Coulthard has now announced his candidacy for the State of Wisconsin Assembly District 4 seat, which is open. Or remapped, right? It got redistricted. Am I getting that correct? So it's basically an open seat.
Right. It's District 14, and it was redistricted in a way that the two former representatives were drawn into different seats that they'll be running for differently. So this new seat encompasses West Allis, a small portion of the city of Milwaukee, and a smaller portion of the city of Wauwatosa.
So it's a really interesting and diverse demographic. So let me begin first by saying congratulations, Brady. I'm so excited for you, proud and happy that you have decided to be a candidate yourself. You have been involved in politics for a while. Tell folks what really got your, what was the your initial political itch?
Yeah, to be honest, I really did not care about politics until 2018, my senior year of high school. In Parkland, Florida, at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, there was a shooting where 17 people died and 17 others were injured. And at that same time, my first niece, Quinn, was entering 4K. While I was exiting my senior year, she was entering, and all I could think about was school going to look like for her. We were seeing it in my rural community. We were starting lockdown drills my last semester of high school. And I know all of your listeners know that that has not stopped. And now I have five nieces, and they became my why of why I got involved in politics. And following the Parkland shooting came the March for Our Lives movement, which was the first time that I saw young people be the face of the movement and not just pawns in the political game.
Right. Just a demographic that we got to make sure we turn out.
Right. So I felt inspired that I could do something about it. So my freshman year of college, I was a pre-pharmacy major who I definitely saw people struggle with, you know, insulin costs, not knowing, you know, they hit their donut hole for their insurance and then they couldn't pay for their drugs. And as a pre-pharmacy major, I was applying for internships with Tammy Baldwin's office because deep in my heart, I wanted to do something about gun violence and promote responsible gun ownership. So I made the switch to a career in politics.
Big switch.
It is.
Science and now, hopefully, you know, data and science inform public policy, right?
Right. And I think at the end of the day, they are really linked because we want what's best for our communities. If I was a pharmacist today, I'd be working to keep my community safe and healthy. And that's exactly what I want to do as a state legislator.
Isn't that lovely? Isn't that the point? I often, you know, sort of deride the performing politician who does things they know won't ever pass and doesn't promote greater community or wellness or betterment for their constituents, but simply because it's going to grab a headline. I'm so thrilled that someone as young as you has decided to throw their hat in the ring. When you talk about lockdown drills, for those of us in my sort of age group, we remember doing that, but it was basically for war. Our war is now in our schools because we refuse to do anything meaningful about guns in this country when the vast majority of us think red flag laws, waiting periods, all these things are common sense, wellness enhancing regulations.
Yeah, I grew up in rural Wisconsin in Clark County. And I think a really important stat to think about is that the majority of gun deaths in Wisconsin are caused, are deaths by suicide due to access. And I think we can talk about the mental health crisis there as well. But there are things that we can do with secure storage, having background checks on all sales that have a vast variety of support. One thing I'm really proud of is as a volunteer with Moms Demand Action, the Wisconsin anti-violence effort, I've been able to push legislation forward in Madison that I got my Republican state legislator to co-sponsor.
And what legislation was that?
It was the Extreme Risk Protection Order. And that's essentially a law that says if someone is unsafe to themselves or their community or it's a present danger, law enforcement can step in and remove access temporarily to that firearm.
It seems like eminently reasonable. If you pose an immediate and present threat to yourself or your community, you probably shouldn't have guns around. I don't know. See, it doesn't seem like such a huge stretch, but apparently some convincing needed.
Yeah. And I mean, it really came down to telling a story and not talking points.
Yes.
One of my good friends, her nephew died in a situation that if we had an extreme risk protection order, he may still be alive today.
Mm.
The cops made his children give him back the weapon. And unfortunately, he took his life that evening. So we told that story and We also got our legislator to sign on to bills for a tax incentive on secure storage mechanisms like gun locks and vaults.
Yep.
And this is just the bare minimum things we can do. A sales tax, they talk about that in political science class, that like that is one of the simplest things that you can do to incentivize and reward good behavior.
Right.
So
in other words, a sales tax on
a relief, sales tax relief.
Yep.
So essentially, when you go to buy a gun lock, you wouldn't pay sales tax. So
no just, sales tax. Yep.
So just making that a little more affordable.
Yes. In other words, using different means to help incentivize more safe, more community wellness producing behaviors by responsible gun owners, of which that's the majority of gun owners in Wisconsin. Yeah. I mean, most of the people I know hunt.
Yeah. And, I'm a gun owner.
Right.
I went hunting all like my childhood.
Yep.
Up in Carr County. And I just think we
can have do better.
We can do better. We have a public health crisis on our hand. Gun violence is the number one cause of death for our children. And I have 5 nieces, and that makes me really worried. But it's not the only reason I'm running.
We're running. I want to hear those additional reasons. We're going to take a couple of quick messages. We got a couple of callers lined up.
Awesome.
We're going to come back with more with Brady Coulthard. New candidate just announced today. Breaking news here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Running for the State Assembly in District 14. Keep it locked. We got more with Brady coming up after these short messages here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Maggie Dawn. You got a question, comment, thought, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Back with more in just a moment. Can run, so run, and run, and run. So every day now you brace for the sound you've only heard on TV. You go to class scared, wondering where the best hiding spot would be. And the big bad man and his big bad clan, their hands. One burn into flames. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you want to join us for the last segment of the day, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. If you're on the line, stay there. I will get to you. I'm joined this half hour by newly announced just today candidate for the Wisconsin's 14th Assembly District, Brady Coulthard. You were just sharing before the break that thinking reasonably about guns and the things to do to promote community safety is one of the things that you has gotten you involved in politics and energized you to run. But there are a couple of other things, too. What are those, Brady?
Yeah, I think the District 14 as a whole represents a good chunk of West Dallas and a smaller chunk of Wauwatosa and Milwaukee. And within those communities, we like to say that West Dallas is on the rise. That's kind of like the slogan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's largely in part because of the small business community. I'm a small business owner myself, and my family is a small business family as well. So I want to bring that kind of experience to Madison and make sure that our small businesses here have the tools they need to succeed, because I want to make sure that West Dallas continues to grow. The other thing that I think is really important, and our Senator Tammy Baldwin is doing a really good job promoting this at the moment, and I believe she'll do a fantastic job in the U.S. Senate, is promoting Buy Wisconsin, Buy America. I think that's a really good way to be a champion for working class people.
Yeah.
And tying that in side by side, hand in hand with labor unions and supporting the work they do to make sure that working families can
live well and prosper.
Exactly. Yeah.
We'll get a little Trekkie reference in. I think that's just fabulous. And I, you know, at your age, Brady, you've done so much already. It's wonderful to see you leaning in this new way. So my heartfelt congratulations, best of luck to you. Where can people find out more about your platform and your campaign?
Yeah, you can learn more about my campaign at www.brady4assembly.com. That's brady4assembly.com. And we're on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
Awesome. I heard that you had a late night last night. Why were you up so late before your big campaign announcement?
I was up very late because I had to make sure that my website was done well. We launched bilingually because the district is 22% Latino. And as a bilingual speaker, I wanted to make sure that I'm able to communicate with everyone. And having a accessible website that is able to communicate with the vast majority of the district is really important to me.
That's simply awesome. Thanks so much, Brady. Let's go to the phones. Mark, you have been extremely patient. Mark, our friend from Prairie du Sac, what do you have to say this afternoon? Mark, you there? Are you on mute? Hello,
yeah,
Mark.
I'm here now. I'm sorry that I had on mute. The whole threat environment that Donald Trump has created, I was kind of looking at, you know, what is the penalty for making threats, and that apparently now the Supreme Court decided, well, they got to test your state of mind to see what, you know, if your threats are generally valid or not. And it's just ridiculous to me that we've got people like Fani Willis who had to move from her home to another home, you know, leave her home that she loved, you know, because of the death threat she'd received. I mean, and that apparently in your question last week about her making the comment about thanking him for his bravery and taking the job, her coworker there, that, well, apparently that he was the third person she'd asked because other people didn't want to do it because they're afraid of their lives being threatened. And, you know, it just stretches back in history, and I've used this example in the past. You can, that people have been punished in the past for making offhand comments that have led to the deaths of people. And apparently, and the famous one that comes to my mind is that when Henry II said, well, somebody rid me of this irksome priest, and his household knights went and murdered Thomas Becket. And of course, Henry II, you know, was punished for that. Well, Trump on a daily basis makes similar comments, and that we do not know how many people have actually been threatened or, you know, received violence on behalf of Donald Trump. And my fear is at some point in time, one of these people is going to be inspired to, you know, murder who they perceive as Trump's enemies. And
you mean like Mike Pence, maybe to hang Mike Pence? Yes, the rhetoric is escalating. This is psychological priming for people to create, more and more egregious acts of violence. Thank you, Mark. Jack from Merrimack, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. Say hi to Brady.
Hi, Brady.
Hi.
Since we're talking a bit about local politics, or at least statewide politics, I just wanted to point out something very important. There are two constitutional amendments on the ballot this April, and they are both basically trying to make the elections more difficult to hold. I won't go into a lot of detail on it, but the bottom line is, the only reason why our gerrymandered Republican legislature put them on as constitutional amendments was because they knew darn well that Tony Evers would veto them if they...
Yeah, we don't have much time. Jack, I had literally written down in my notepad to promo for tomorrow's show, I will be explaining the constitutional amendments that are on the ballot. They sound innocuous. They sound like they're a good idea. But as with all things Republican, they don't actually ever say what they really mean, because if they did and explained it in plain language, you'd be shocked. Shocked, I say. Just like Donald Trump's escalating language. Outside of that context, outside of the psychological priming, most conservatives I know would find what he says on a day-over-day basis deeply offensive. Don't miss tomorrow's show. Viktor Orban, the constitutional amendments on April 2nd's ballot. Might even talk about the city attorney's race again. Might even talk about the comptroller's race at Milwaukee County, because those will matter. I'm also going to be joined by Reggie Jackson, Milwaukee and Wisconsin historian and executive director of the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Brady, thank you so much for being here. I hope you'll come back and talk all things assembly election in District 14.
Of course, I'd love to. Thank you, Maggie.
Great having you. Remember, everybody, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, because it's always better when we stand together. That's it for the Monday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show. Keep it locked, everybody. The Devil's Advocates Radio coming up next in the 4 to 6 o'clock hour. I will see and hear you all tomorrow.
May the last one burn into flames. Keep on running, 'cause the winner don't quit on themselves.